Okay, so I may be the first person to put up a slide that says I have a financial relationship. Maybe I was a little too careful about what that definition means, but I work for the Lewin Group, and in a minute I'll explain this to you. First, let me just say that my two colleagues at the Lewin Group, Grace Yang and Pete Welch, were very instrumental in helping me put this together. And this work was really inspired when Jane Gentleman of the National Center for Health Statistics called me because she was doing a study to analyze time intervals between mammograms. And that sparked her research and her papers that were given at the Joint Statistical Meeting in the summer, and then we worked together to prepare this as well. So I'm employed by the Lewin Group, and I think that's a financial interest, but maybe I was a little too close to what the definition meant. But we are owned by Ingenix Public Sector Solutions, which is in turn owned by United Health Group. And the data that I'm going to present are data from United Healthcare, which is a major payer for insurance. Okay, so a little bit of background, which by now, the second day of this meeting, almost third day of the meeting, you've really seen this many times, that the National Cancer Institute estimated that in 2007 we identified 207,000 new cases of breast cancer and almost 40,000 deaths from female breast cancer in the United States. And of course, we've all been talking about the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force data and their announcements over the last year, and they estimate that when women who are ages 40 to 49 have a mammogram, it reduces their mortality by about 15%, for women 50 to 59, 14%, but for women in the age group 60 to 69%, there's an important reduction in mortality. So now there's some conflict around the guidelines that we all know, and we've seen these in our talks since we've been here, that the American Cancer Society recommends yearly mammograms starting at age 40 and continuing as long as the woman is in good health. That could be 70, it could be 80, it could be 90. And the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force in 2009 recommended that mammograms not be performed routinely for an average risk woman in their 40s, but rather continued according to risk assessed on an individual basis, and that they be biannual after age 50. And the Healthy People 2010 objective was 70% of women over 40 receive a mammogram in the preceding 2 years. So what motivated us for this study was, having looked at the time intervals with the CDC, we wanted to understand what kind of compliance in a very large commercial data source we might find, and then to understand that level of compliance using claims data. The data we've seen in most of our studies has been survey data. So are women getting mammograms anyway? We first had to say what were our definitions, and the first definition was a most recent mammogram was between 12 and 15 months. For those of you who are familiar with the process, you go to your doctor perhaps for an annual checkup, the doctor hopefully says you need a mammogram, then you pick up the phone and you schedule your mammogram, and you're not going to get it that day, you're going to probably get it 3 months later if you're fortunate. And it requires a second visit, et cetera. So it's not like you go next door and have your mammogram. Okay. Non-compliance was you did not have a mammogram in the last 2 years. And then we called something called partial compliance. We said, if you had received a mammogram within the last 3 years, we'd say we could check off the box there. Or if you had at least two mammograms, but the most recent one was either after 15 months, or it was before 12 months. And before 12 months meant usually that you'd had a screening mammogram, something didn't look good, you had a diagnostic mammogram after that, and then you might have had your next mammogram a year later. Okay, so let me tell you about this data. The data are really very exciting, and there's a lot of it. And I encourage you to think about your research and what you might be able to do with claims data in conjunction with other kinds of data that you're looking at. First of all, our claims-based data repository is one of the largest commercial medical insurance databases in the country. It includes inpatient, outpatient, people who go to the CVS to have their blood pressure taken, any sort of instant clinics, I think they're called. We have a lot of lab data. We have a lot of pharmacy claims data, so if your physician gave you a prescription and you filled it, that will be in the database. We have approximately 20 million members. They're all insured. They're part of an employed base, and over a three-year period, we probably have 35 million claims, and that's all families, so it would be children and adults. The study period was April 1st, 2006 to December 31st, 2008, only because we had to pull our archive data, and April 1st was the date. And our study population was women of at least 40 years of age, and we only looked at women who had continuous enrollment over the three-year period. So we sliced this down a bit more so that we could look over the three-year period and see what mammogram compliance was looking at. So some of the pluses around using claims data: it's not subject to recall bias. We may miss a mammogram paid by another insurer. Some people do have multiple insurance plans, especially if one plan doesn't charge any copays, and some people will use both plans. What's really nice about looking at the claims data is the granularity on the timing of mammograms, as well as the CPT codes. The claims databases provide very large samples and accurate health information. The data have exceptional data when it comes to knowing the year, month, and date that a mammogram was prescribed, and the why, because now we have the CPT codes. And when in my paper, if you go to it, you'll see that there's a whole assortment of different kinds of CPT codes that are in the mammography category. Of course, this is a large database of commercially insured women, which says that they're part of the employed base. And our data are demographically representative of the U.S. income-wise for people who are employed. People are employed. We don't have Medicaid data in here, and we don't have the uninsured. So this is a look at what our data. Let me make sure I didn't miss something. Right. Okay. We had 2.6 million women in our sample. And the age distribution, 40 to 49, 50 to 51 were equal, and then 60 to 64.4 million. After we get to 65, we rely on the Medicare data. Okay, so this is what the data look like. The very tall bars, unfortunately, are not the women who are getting mammograms. And this was a big surprise to us, that the blue bar was a woman who did not have a mammogram in the past 2 years. The purple bars show a woman who was getting a mammogram every year within, let's say, 15 months. And if you look as the age increases, by age 60, about 30% of the women were having a mammogram every year. And for partial compliance, in other words, was there a mammogram in that three-year period, the compliance was a little higher. So 43% did not have a mammogram in the last 2 years for women in the total range that we're looking at. 23% were fully compliant, 34% were partially compliant. So we could say 57% had received a mammogram in the two-year period. And this is especially striking because this is a population where people have insurance. We get a reminder card every year that says it's time to have your mammogram. And this is a covered service. Now, starting in 2010, there are no copays at all. And I'm not familiar with whether or not there were copays beforehand, but we will be able to report in 2 years what this looks like. But it looks like these people have full access to preventive care. And I'm not going to ask you all to take a vote here, but think about yourselves. Have you had your mammogram? And think about your colleagues. I took a poll at work, where we are a health policy research firm, and I was pretty surprised at the women who were not having mammograms. Okay, that's just a repetition of what I said before. So what are the barriers to annual mammography? We've done some research into this and looked at lots of studies. I think the first issue is people don't understand their insurance coverage, and I've seen that with lots of talks that were given over the last 2 days. There's some health literacy issues, and then there are people who just don't think about preventive care. There are cultural issues. There's race, ethnicity issues, as we've talked about here. There are income concerns, and there's education. There's a lifestyle issue. These are women who are, in many cases today, they're working, they have children who need to be taken to soccer and swim meet and music lessons, and while they may make time for their first, their exam to go to their primary care physician, they may not make time to go back to have screenings and lab tests and the like. A question about provider behaviors and media, medical culture. We don't know about this. A study that I listened to yesterday from the Cancer Institute indicates that providers say they are reminding women to have their mammograms. We don't know how that is received. We don't know whether or not they're just giving someone a piece of paper and saying you need to have this done. But those are all, you know, survey data. We know there's been a lot of articles in the newspaper around exposure to radiation, and over the last year there's been a lot of talk about calibration concerns in some imaging devices that may be a concern, and we do know that discomfort of the mammogram is another issue, and again, those of you who have had mammograms know what I'm talking about. This is not like going to have a bone density scan. Okay. So what are our key take-home messages? First thing I'd like to say is that it's a distinctive methodology looking at claims data versus survey data. We can categorize compliance, and we have a greater granularity on timing than we do with surveys. Compliance may be more problematic than previously thought, and there's a concern over the discrepancy between claims and survey-based rates, which we need to understand. And in 2006, there was a paper done exactly on that topic of how are people responding to questions around their health, and especially mammograms, when they're asked that in a survey. And we know that people try to respond in the most positive way they can, and when it comes to mammograms, they overestimate when they had their last mammogram, and sometimes they just respond positively to behaviors that should be positive. Okay, so I leave you with a lot of research questions that we want to be looking at, and I encourage you to look at in the years to come. The first one, which to me is the most important, is can preventive health and wellness programs be successful? We have here a case of something that is we spend a month on breast cancer awareness every year. We talk about this a lot, it's in the paper a lot. Whenever a prominent woman has breast cancer, it gets a lot of publicity. Having mammograms is one of those preventive screenings that's important, and yet, from our data, it doesn't look like women are getting screened in the proportions we'd like them to be getting screened. Are provider attitudes affecting these healthy behaviors? And will we make time to schedule the kind of screenings and preventive work that we need done to live a healthy lifestyle? I think there are also questions about the methodology that are important to consider. Number one, is recall the only discrepancy between claims and survey data? Is the analysis of medical claims data that good? And some of our economists and mathematicians are still looking at these issues to make sure that our study and our analysis of the claims data are really the best that can be done. And again, what is the impact of multiple insurers? And we don't know what the impact is on private people who have multiple private coverage, people who might have TRICARE, VA coverage, or public take advantage of public health screenings. So when you get to my paper, there's lots of references, and I want to thank you very much. And I'm sorry I have to leave quickly, so if you have any immediate questions, I'm happy to answer them. Otherwise, you can email me.
Any questions? Yes, sir.
That was a very interesting presentation. Thank you. And there are a couple of things and questions I have about it. First of all, the data is quite different from national survey data.
That's correct.
So I guess, given the nature of your population, you have a wonderful opportunity here, which is to go back and do a post-hoc investigation, assuming that these people could be recontacted, to present the findings and do an investigation as to what's going on. What is the main reason for your lack of compliance? Does it have to do with provider recommendation, which we know from many studies seems to be the main reason, or other reasons? So, you know, probably I just think that would be a great opportunity to have.
No, I think I think that's very important. We've talked about the need for some focus groups to look at some of these categories of women who are not getting mammograms. The other thing to remember is that these data, while there's, you know, 20 million lives here, and there's 2.5 million women, they are not geographically representative. They're demographically representative, and they have not been weighted at all. And so there's a lot more work that has to be done. But this was like a first aha. But thank you.